Yeah, so we just normally just get into it. And first of all, it's very nice to meet you, Jose, and thanks for being on our podcast. But before we really dive into it, just to let everyone know that's listening, today the portfolio company we invested in as Koito Group, Cepton Technologies, has SPAC'd. It actually SPAC'd last week, but today they rang the bell at NASDAQ.
Congratulations.
Yeah, woo. So that's great. Our team member, Tom Masuda, went over there, rang the bell. He's in the picture in the background. Usually wears red glasses to stand out, but not this time because his red glasses broke. So we can still tell who he is. So we're excited, and it's been a great 5 years.
Yeah, it's really great news. It's really the result of a lot of work on both sides, both on Koito and with Cepton. It's been a great partnership for us.
Yeah. On top of that, because Cepton is more of a LiDAR-based hardware technology, it's going to be used for ADAS and AV vehicles for keeping L3 to L5 and even L2 vehicles safe because of the point cloud that it can detect and send back to the vehicle to make proper decisions. It's still a hardware-based solution, right, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely.
And now we're in the realm of talking more about the business model of software-based solutions. And something interesting I saw today was from the Chinese manufacturer NIO. NIO is an electric vehicle maker that's based out of China. It's sold around 180,000 vehicles since its inception. And one of the very interesting things I heard today, Dan, was that the NIO community has an app that has around 500,000 users that allows for people to chat with employees, to schedule their maintenance, and also buy merchandise. And it causes this stickiness and awareness within the community.
I heard about this. It's kind of a way for people who own NIOs and or people who are just interested in it to get in touch with each other, kind of like a social media network for them.
Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting. And I think it falls in line with what Jose is doing here with And Go and Goodyear. Do you want to comment a little bit on that before I introduce you, Jose?
Yeah, absolutely. So leading an effort now, or it's like an internal startup at Goodyear called Ango, and a little bit of what we're trying to do is, create a platform that enables services, and some of those are electric vehicle companies, but there's a bunch of other kind of like EV projects as well that definitely I can dig into during this interview.
Great. So I really appreciate you being here. What do you think about NIO or other car manufacturers creating these type of apps that's causing this stickiness for their users to engage with either the CEO or other members of the company?
You know, it's really cool. And I think when I started getting into mobility multiple years ago, I always thought like, you know, cars, you know, phones are so cool, and we're seeing all these other experiences from all these other tech companies. Like, when is this technology going to get to cars? Like, when are we going to see this kind of like transparent communication? And you know, we've seen so many developments, but I think, you know, I haven't heard what NIO was doing until right now, actually, that you mentioned it. I think it's the future, and I think it's the way that customers want to interact. I'm right now on this eternal wait list to get a Tesla, but they've been really, really, really like customer centric in a very noble way on how I am in line. That has made it a lot better. And the way that the application works, it's very different. And by the way, right as I am getting this car, I also started talking to this other dealership because I'm like, okay, I might never get my car. And the communication there is completely different. And it's like a more traditional approach. And I'm seeing the stark differences.
Wow.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Well, why don't we get started and talk a little bit about, if you can introduce yourself, you're Jose Diaz Salazar, and just tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today. Not how you got to Costa Rica, because I know you're there right now, but how you, in your career.
Well, that's a perfect way to start. I'm born and raised in Costa Rica. I'm here for a quick visit, and I studied design here, and then I went to the U.S. and did an MBA and got really into the combination of design, engineering, and business. That was kind of like my main goal when I studied, and I actually got I did my internship during my grad degree at Goodyear with the innovation team that was already working a few years into a bunch of projects. And I got in, and I always say this, never in my life I thought I would work for a tire company, like never crossed my mind. Mobility as an industry wasn't like in my radar back then. And this is 2013, 14. And but then, like, you know, just hearing what the team was thinking and this kind of like semi existential challenges or questions that were being asked by some more traditional, tier one and two suppliers, even OEMs at that point, of like electrification, autonomy, shared, like how are all these trends going to combine and affect, right? And that really hooked me at that point. So I started working in that team, and after my grad degree, got a job there and you know, worked for, you know, I think my specialization from the beginning at Goodyear was car sharing and in the sharing economy. So I became a Lyft driver for a while to do research, and that was pretty insightful, and did some projects with a ride hailing company in Mexico to figure it out, and then moved some projects as well with some California startups that were doing new business models and innovation. A lot of these companies don't exist today. Some of these companies are killing it right now, but we've seen that trend, right, of how car sharing and ride hailing, some are no longer around and some are doing really cool things still. And that led me, you know, one step after another to, you know, kind of ask this question for Goodyear, like, should Goodyear be in Silicon Valley? And if the answer is yes, how? To me, the answer from the beginning was a big yes. But of course, you know, you got to bring people along and you got to show data and you got to show information. So slowly but surely, we got to that yes of like, you know, you can open an you know, outpost in Silicon Valley. But I think the big question for me is like, how do you open an outpost for Goodyear, right? Like, how do you do that, right? And I took an approach from my design background years of like just a lot of like, you know, interviews with customers and trying to figure out what other people have done. And, you know, I got a lot of help from the folks at Ford, and a lot of help actually from the folks at Bosch as well. And just talked to a lot of people that had like labs and talked to a lot of startups. And that led me to this big question, which is, you know, Goodyear has to become a tech company before a tech company becomes a tire company. And I know that like is maybe a little outrageous, like you're not going to see a Google making tires, but there are going to be like, you know, e-commerce things that they can do, or Amazon that like can really put like a more, you know, bigger, you know, company like Goodyear in spots that they don't want to be. And I really found that captivating, because it's a whole like tech strategy question of like, then what do you have to do to mitigate that risk? And that's how we actually founded the lab, is we're going to do digital innovation, and we're going to focus on like not only building digital solutions that can help and do the research for that, that can help Goodyear and the ecosystem in general, but also like thinking about the capabilities that a company like Goodyear has to have to be able to build those things. So, you know, in a nutshell, I guess that's how, you know, I moved from Costa Rica to San Francisco. It took me 15 years to get there, but it was a great journey and enjoying every bit of it.
That's awesome. I mean, everything you did sounds amazing, but one thing that kind of stuck is you were a Lyft driver. Where were you driving Lyft? Was it in Costa Rica or local?
It was in Cleveland, actually, back in day when I was working in Goodyear headquarters in Akron, Ohio. So I had my residence in Cleveland. So as soon as I could, I became a Lyft driver. I did it for a full 2 weeks, and then sporadically here and there. And you know, that's the beauty of when you have a design mindset. It's like, you know, you have secondary research, but doing it like primary, being there, being in the shoes of the person, is just so much powerful when you're trying to, you know, work in that industry. I think those 2 weeks are probably the most the best weeks I've ever invested in my term, my Goodyear, in terms of learning.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, we think all the time about riding Lyft and understanding the pain points from the consumer side, but from the driver's side, I'm sure you must have had a lot of learnings from that perspective as well.
Yeah, I definitely can share one big one that was super eye-opening for me. It's like, I what I did is I tracked every single bit of, you know, money that I was, you know, making, and then every single bit of like miles that I was riding. And then I created a model based on the, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but AAA puts out this public, really helpful, like, vehicle maintenance guide, and they actually break down vehicle maintenance by the cent and by the mile. So miles, you know, cents per mile for everything. So I used that model and input it into my own model. And I realized that, like, back in the day, and I don't remember this, they were exactly the number, but these ride-hailing companies were advertising your revenue per hour to be high. And I run the numbers, and I run depreciation and maintenance and everything by the mile that I was driving. And I was seeing like a lot less money per hour than what I thought I would actually be getting, which led me to the insight that, like, whatever business model you're going to design for ride hail drivers has to be extremely cost efficient for it to be actually something that can work, which led me to a bunch of other stuff later in life. But that was, I think, one of the biggest insights I got early on in my career at Goodyear.
Very interesting. And you said something really interesting. You said a tire company needs to become a tech company before a tech company becomes a tire company. So you've got this existential threat as motivation to come into Silicon Valley, which I thought was an interesting thing to think about. A lot of large companies like Goodyear, you know, Goodyear, a $12 billion large automotive company with a globally recognized name, is thinking about what you can gain by having a presence in Silicon Valley, but also equally important, what can you lose by not being in Silicon Valley? And I thought that was an interesting realization that you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you don't lose anything, right? And that's the cool thing about opening a lab and picturing how that, or visioning how that lab would look like. And I think, you know, the existential question was less critical for a good year because we knew that, like, more miles are going to get driven throughout the years. A question is, what's going to change in the customer behavior that is going to drive changes in how those miles, you know, services and tires for those miles get actually paid for. So I think there's a question more of, like, our industry or our business is not in an existential problem. It's more like there's big shifts going to happen that could lead to problems. Let's get ahead of the curve. And then for me, technology was more of a question of ecosystems. I was seeing, like, different ecosystems becoming more important. Like, you know, there's the ride hail, obviously car sharing and all the shared mobility ecosystem, but it's the underlying technologies that enabled those models that were really interesting. And I think, you know, the more these companies continue to grow and the more they build more technology, they're going to look like, I don't know, like this mobility tech, you know, huge companies that, like, touch multiple areas of the value chain of mobility. And it's going to be harder for more traditional suppliers, tier ones, tier two, to be embedded and extract value, I think, from those models, because the tech companies are going to control a lot of the value creation. So for me, the way I kind of picture it is, we need to think more like that and build more technology that enable us to have a better positioning, strategically speaking, in the future.
Wonderful. So you drove Lyft. You sort of saw that income and revenue is kind of a problem. You saw some other trends with autonomous vehicles, and you also saw that tech companies are starting to come into the automotive space because software is becoming a larger and larger need. So you saw all these trends in the mobility industry, and then eventually developed a new service through this innovation hub in Silicon Valley. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you know, I'll tell you about the service, but I think the main insight that led us to that service, it is, and I use this analogy. I talked to our team. This is a very internal analogy, but I'll share it with you. The back end and the front end of mobility and two kind of different sections, I feel like, of the value chain of mobility. So this confuses my engineers, our engineers at Ango, because obviously in software engineer, back end and front end mean specific things, but I use it as a construct that, like, the front end of mobility is everything that enables the experience. So if you think about a company like Lyft, like the front end is everything that enables a driver being able to drive a rider, and a rider being able to request a ride, and a rider being able to pay a driver and rate that experience, and a driver being able to receive tips and all that, right? But then what we have on the back end is the actual services for those cars. And what I saw with my team at the beginning when we were doing research and we created the Innovation Lab San Francisco was that the back end on mobility wasn't innovating as fast as the front end was. So you started seeing like Uber, Lyft, and like all these new models, Turo, come out, and different startups doing all these kind of cool and interesting things, and a lot of them enabling the front end or some connections. Even fleet management software, or like software that came to enable that, were more around like, you know, applications for consumers, etc. But we weren't seeing that level of innovation on the other side, on the back end. And I think that right now it's easy to explain, but what I saw with my team back then was, if you were a fleet of 100 vehicles in some city in California, let's say LA, right, and you were doing some sort of shared new model, and you had like an application and people could share that model and et cetera, right, through an app and some cool technology to enable that. At the end of the day, if you have like an issue with your car, you still would have to go to like a retail like maintenance shop and wait in line with all the other customers for your vehicle. And, you know, when we need to get a tire change, you know, some, or like an oil change or whatever we need from our cars, we, you know, we go there and sometimes they tell us, you know, it's going to take the whole day, and you take a, you know, a ride hail back to your work, or you wait there, and, you know, it's not ideal, but, you know, you kind of live with it, right? But when you like have five cars that are waiting for services, and they tell you come back tomorrow, like you have a whole day of losing revenue, like that's just not going to work, right? So I think these guys had two options. They either build their own operations, hire their own technicians, and grow that side of their business, which is costly, right? Or they depend on providers, right? And depending on providers is hard when you have 500 vehicles, maybe 800 vehicles. Like what we see today with bigger fleets is that they have tens of thousands of vehicles. So they get access to providers in a different way because of their sheer volume, right? But that ain't, that that isn't happening for new mobility companies. So that was a big moment for us to be like, all right, like there's definitely a new experience here that has to be designed, because these guys, new mobility companies, my customers today, they need better services that are completely more efficient, that are data driven, that are connected to technologies, you know, be it like APIs, and they need those services to increase the uptime of their vehicles. And they need it in a way that they don't have to continue to grow their operation teams, because they're going to end up looking like more of a traditional, you know, mobility company, like a traditional bigger car rental company, which nothing bad with that, but it's not their mission, right? Those things combined led us to think, all right, like, what if we can create technology that brings up the level of connectivity, innovation, you know, efficiency of the backend of mobility, and leverage that to service new mobility companies? And, you know, it was a lot of experimentation, and we had like first some prototypes that we tested out, mostly in California, LA and San Francisco, and we got really good results. We were able to like bring the uptime of a vehicle, you know, from 50% to 80% in our experiments. We're like, okay, we think we're onto something. And there's also like this line of sight where like, this is really cool right now, and like there's a lot of value creation in this, but this is also going to be so much important with electric vehicles. This is going to be also so much important with autonomous vehicle and last mile. We didn't know that a pandemic was going to hit years later and that last mile was going to explode. But like, you know, we knew that there were shifts coming, and we're like, there's a lot of, you know, opportunity here. So we put more people into it and more thought into it, and essentially launched AndGo, which is a platform, vehicle servicing platform that connects service providers with new mobility fleets and orchestrates or facilitates the whole service, so it happens at the right time at the right place.
Wow, that's quite deep, your strategy, at least. And that's very impressive to go that deep into a strategy and see how the world is changing and have those optics. One question I have is, there's a lot AndGo is doing, and I guess your product would be good for B2B and B2C. where do you see the monetization of B2B and B2C taking place? And in terms of B2B, who are your customers?
Yeah, so let's talk first about B2B. So some of our biggest customers are, we service Kinto, which is Kinto Share, a Toyota-owned car-sharing company in the U.S. We work with Turo. We partner with them. We work with, multiple companies like that. And those are like some of our top two customers. There's also other customers on the last mile delivery side that are, providing services for companies like Amazon. So they have their own fleets. They're not like famous names out there, but they have multiple last mile delivery vans running around. And then we service actually also some autonomous vehicle companies that I can't say the names right now, but we work with a few of them as well. And it's very interesting. So we're like learning from like, more of like your car sharing, ride hailing, or this concept that we call it that is exploding right now, car share for ride share. So essentially is car sharing companies that enable vehicles for gig workers to go and do last mile deliveries or ride hail. So there's this very interesting connection in our customers right now between car share and ride share that has led a lot of growth in our business. For example, we grew the amount of work we do, the number of service jobs that we facilitate to the platform, 5x between 2019 and 2020 and 2021. Sorry. And a lot of it was driven by a lot of work, that is driving, that is being driven by the pandemic. Obviously a horrible situation that has led to many horrible things, but has led also to a shift in a lot of models in mobility. Like, we saw, I don't know if you remember this news come out, like Instacart hired like almost 500,000 people in like a quarter. And this was like, Instacart delivery people, I guess. But that for me was like mind blowing on how can they add so many people to deliver food, right? You can see the shifts in the economy going, right? So that's what we do. And I think the main value offering that we offer this fleets right now is, they go in, they set up their service plan, and they say they add all their vehicles in our platform, and we just help them execute the services, and they set up in their service plan the uptime that they require, and then we help them drive that. We connect them with service providers, mainly partner with Goodyear Retail and Just Tire stores, but we also partner with other service providers. But we highly manage the quality, the time, and the communication. So think about an end goal as Uber Eats, right? Uber Eats connects you to, you go into the Uber Eats app and you can see restaurants and you request food from them, and the restaurant, tells when the food's ready to get picked up and they get delivered to you. Like Ango in a way is kind of doing that, where our customers, instead of seeing food, they see the services they want, or there's a proactive also functionality there, and they see the services happen. And then we work with the service provider to show them the visibility of the services that are coming, visibility on the services that are coming even next week. And when we orchestrate the whole experience, so the service is happening at the right time in the right place. And that's our value prop for B2B. Now on the other side, B2C, that's an area that we haven't tapped into. We haven't gone into it. We've thought about it a lot, and we think there's a lot of potential in some areas, but hasn't really happened yet. So TBD.
Yeah, great. I think you have a really smart strategy, because to use the Uber Eats analogy, you've got a platform where fleet managers can pull up Ango and look for the services that they need to keep the maintenance up to date on their cars. And by doing that, you're providing the service for money, right? They're paying you to provide this service. But on the other side, you're getting all this maintenance data and use data, and you're really understanding how fleets are being utilized. That must be another big part of your business. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, we haven't monetize that side of the business actually, and for the time being we're not going to, but it helps so much. So Ango has a set of features. Of course, one is this fleet view, we call it, and then the fleet view, you go in and you see all your vehicles and you see the services that are upcoming, the services that you're requested, the total cost and stuff like that. And on that fleet view, essentially you're seeing the health of your fleet. But if you click on a vehicle, you can go and see the history of all those services. And one also really cool feature that we build in Ango is called a service form. So a service form is a form that as a customer, you can customize 100% and essentially create any form, any kind of service form that you want. So it could be like a type of cleaning that you wanted to be specifically. It could be a type of inspection that you wanted to take, you know, 25 pictures of your car in a way, whatever it is. But all that data gets stored there and you get to customize your forms. So we, you know, you get to go back and see all the services that you've that have been performed in your vehicle in the past, which is really, really powerful. I don't know if our users are doing that and going back and looking at, you know, 150 service forms that are stored there, but they could if they want. And what we're working on that is that enables then our machine learning algorithms to go and do predictive suggestions, which we're still in the infancy of that, but we're reaching a critical point of data now that's going to get even better, right? And that's a part of Ango that I'm really excited into the near future.
Interesting. Yeah. And you can track that. You can see how users are using your app as well and see if they're actually looking at that data or is that not interesting to them?
Yes. You know, we just are launching data analytics on the full side. We were only using it in sections, but yeah, totally. Yeah.
Very cool.
I want to bring it back to another subject, kind of your core business, compare it to ours. So one of the things that was interesting to me is as we move from EVs or ICE to EV, so internal combustion engines to EVs, there's less components being used. And some of the traditional tier ones are affected by this as they have to rethink their business. And we're doing that as well. And you at Goodyear as well. How do you feel about that? Do you think it's going to happen that it's going to disrupt your business at all? Or is the move to EV disruption happening at Goodyear? For us, we see a very good opportunity because the lighting is not going to be really disrupted. And as you move into EVs, we probably get more of the perimeter around the vehicle because the airflow that was required to cool down the engine in front of the vehicle is now not needed. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, there was a Boston Consulting report that said by 2030, we're going to use our vehicle 25% more. So I think the utilization rate right now is 4%. So even if we up that to 5%, that's 25% more. I guess that's great for your business because people use more tires. Is there anything you'd like to comment on any of those?
Yeah, on the first one specifically, it's really interesting to me. Like I've seen Goodyear go through a transformation of like, doing a lot of thinking about this to now doing a lot of action, which is really, really inspiring. And I think like the fact that like, you know, we have some major, tires and we have some major wins in putting tires on some vehicles. I should know this by heart, but I don't. I think the fitment in the Cybertruck for Tesla, for example, is Goodyear. And other electric vehicles, I think we got some fitments on the electric Cadillacs coming out and stuff like that. So I think Goodyear is really thinking about it. I actually was part of some research at the beginning where we were measuring what was the impact of different treads on the range of a battery, right? And that was just so interesting to me how the weight of a vehicle was going to change the way of the consumption of the fuel, but not in a traditional way that it's more money, but more in the way of like, you know, range anxiety. So there's all this connection. The tire is connecting to the road. There's all these connections with tires and just the vehicle experience that we don't think a lot. I think also like there's going to be, you know, we're working very actively on the non-pneumatic tires, and there's some really cool articles out there now. It's still, you know, a technology that needs to be developed further. You can see it on like, I think on the road in a massive scale, but that's going to be also, I think, pretty interesting. And then there's the whole aspect of sustainability and changing the component of the tires and moving to soybean oils and stuff like that I think connects also with the mission of a lot of the new, I think, OEMs that are doing electric vehicles that is pretty interesting. So I do see a lot of those changes. I definitely think that Goodyear, you know, just think about the fact that we opened that lab in 2016-17 and you know, I don't know, at that point I don't think there were a lot there, and I don't still know if till today we're probably the only tire lab or like a lab owned by a tire company in San Francisco, and we're doing all kinds of crazy, you know, cool things. So I think that in from multiple angles, we're kind of like prepping ourselves to not be, you know, just a victim of change, but actually drive that change, which I think is pretty cool. Our CTO and COO, Chris Helsel, used to say, like, we have to manage the old and the new at the same time. He says that still in some of his speeches. And that means, like, we need to continue to do what we do today in Goodyear. And that's what, like, you know, feeds our current business and feeds, you know, keeps the lights on in our innovation labs, for example, that is super important. But we got to also think about the future. And I think Goodyear is going through that process where they are able to do both at the same time. And then the other thing that I see that I'm really excited about is we help launch, and then now we have this awesome team running it, the Goodyear Ventures, which is a CVC, an investment fund for the future of mobility. It's $100 million dedicated in 10 years. It might run out sooner because they're doing so many great investments, and they're putting investments in multiple companies that are driving the future of mobility in a lot of ways. One that I really like that it's also an Ango customer is Starship, which is the little robots that deliver food. Have you guys seen them?
Yeah, the little sidewalk vehicles, right? Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, working with that, it's also like being, you know, part of that change, and then now being like an active member, I think, of the community that is driving the future of mobility is going to help us so much to keep making the right decisions.
Wow, that's incredible. $100 million. And that's Starship is really a consumer facing service. So there is you mentioned your focus on B2B, but that's largely a B2C service, is it not?
Yeah, I guess how I would put it is that's like a B2BC, right? Or something like that they say, right? It's so we offer our customer is Starship and their customer is the end consumer.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, because as you were talking, I was just thinking about an experience I had with my tires. I've sold my car in San Francisco, but when I had it, my tires needed changing, and I knew it, but I put it off just because of the cost. There's a one-time cost of changing your tires, right? And I didn't want to pay that. But if there was some data that were shown to me that said, because your tires are old, every mile that you drive, you're losing this much in miles per gallon. It's costing you this much. And then how many miles are you driving where you're actually losing by not buying new tires, right? That probably would have motivated me to do it earlier.
Yeah, the shift.
Yeah. What do you think? Maybe there's opportunities like that to utilize some of that predictive maintenance that you're working on to show the consumer that, look, that if for a privately owned vehicle, your maintenance is costing you this much by not doing it, and focus them more on that rather than, oh, if I take it to the dealer, this is going to cost me $300 to do this maintenance that I don't want to do.
Yeah, I think there's all kinds of, like, you know, end consumer experiences that we can create. Like my favorite and one of my favorite companies and one of our partners is Turo. And the way that, you know, we know how they do it, but it's a peer-to-peer rental, right? And I think that, like, showing people, like, hey, you have your car here and you're already paying for some maintenance of that car, and you're paying for that car in general, and it's sitting 90% of the time in your driveway, or if it's in San Francisco, probably on a street. And then, like, can you enable that can you enable that vehicle to be rented by other people, and we create that platform? So I think, you know, what I've seen as a challenge, but I'm really excited about this. It's more like an opportunity challenge situation is I call it distributed fleets. I'm guessing other people call it that way too. Like, Turo is really, really cool and interesting. There's thousands of vehicles out there, but they're owned by thousands of people. So going back to that example at the beginning of, like, front end and back end, when you're doing right, like when Uber came out with Uber or Lyft, like came out with Lyft, and like the technology, like, you know, like that technology is so powerful and cool today. I think, I mean, obviously it's not as powerful as Waymo or Cruise or things like that, but Waymo and Cruise are going to be a ride hail service, it looks like, right? And that technology is so cool, and so powerful, right? So I think that that enables them to take advantage of that distributed model, where, like, it's many, many, many drivers and many riders, and they do matchmaking at volumes that like only computers can do, and they make decisions in a split of a second to reroute or to change it to another driver, or all these kinds of things that, like, you know, people are not doing anymore. And I think that when we can bring the back end of mobility to that level of tech, and I think that's exactly what we're working on, I would be more than eager to tackle distributed models in this case and consumers.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's funny how macroeconomic conditions create opportunities for these businesses we would have never thought of. For example, the Great Recession in 2008 created an economic opportunity for Airbnb, who was almost bankrupt. And then their investors said, hey, you got to go to New York, because in Manhattan, everyone cannot pay their mortgage anymore, and this is your opportunity. And I think if we think about cars, 10 years ago, the average price of a car was about $12,000 to $13,000 cheaper than it is today. But people still have the same purchasing power and they're buying new cars. So there's going to be this kind of macroeconomic shift into using your car as an Uber or as a Turo business, which I see more and more on the Turo app as we get more and more expensive cars. And I think electric vehicles will allow for that, because you're less scared of the maintenance point of an electric vehicle than you are of giving out your manual shift Porsche, for example.
To drive on San Francisco hills, right?
Right. So I think if I had an electric vehicle and I had a Model 3, I'd say, hey, you know what? I have a couple cars sitting in my garage. This could be something that I utilize as a business for myself and incorporate myself and put this out there, and people can just rent it for me for X amount a month. So I think there is a trade-off there. And I think you guys found the right spot to kind of hit the nail on the head, I would say.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Time will tell, but I do think we're on a really good trajectory. And you know, I think that what I think is really exciting is to actually see also people change their behaviors and people like try new things. Like you go to, you know, multiple cities and you're seeing multiple like mobility models now, and you go to the conferences and you start seeing that it's less of a grassroots movement around, like, you know, sharing your vehicle and like using a moped or a scooter, and, mm-hmm. and more like actually how people are moving, right? And I've heard this, I haven't been to China in a long time, but people always tell me that, like, in terms of like micromobility and areas of mobility, Chinese cities are like way ahead of like US and even some European cities. So maybe that's where most of the things are happening, but I think you know, it's exciting, and I think you know, you're definitely going to see some shifts. And I think to your point of like macroeconomic or like, you know, kind of like big external events, like the pandemic accelerated a lot of shifts. Like I have this is more anecdotal, like a lot of friends and myself, like we gave up one car during the pandemic. And now like households only have a car, right? Which means that like now when my family is visiting, I have to rent another car, and I go and use a service like Kite, which is in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I heard your interview with Ludwig the other day, which is really cool. By the way, that was a really nice interview. And so you're going to start now like using more of these services, and like we went to one car and we're not thinking about going back to two. You know, we're working from home, we're doing some sort of remote model, and like, you know, I think there's a lot of shift right now that is so exciting, because, you know, obviously the pandemic is a horrible situation, but it forced people to change a lot of behaviors in 2 years.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got rid of my car too.
Well, that was awesome, Jose. We really appreciate having you on this podcast today. I think there was a lot to discuss. You gave us a lot to think about internally as we both lead innovation within our company. And I think it'd be a great opportunity to someday have lunch and sit down or have a beer and just talk about innovation and how the process works in general.
Absolutely. Count me in.
Before we let you go, want to know, what advice would you give to people who want to get into what you do?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. From time to time, I get to talk to people that are trying to get into mobility or automotive. And one thing I'll say is, like, if you're really into it and you're like, you want to push the boundary in a way, you're like a rebel, and you like, you know, you kind of want to like do something very sustainable, or you're seeing where trends are going and you want to push the boundaries, like I'd say start your own company. There's just so much green space, I feel, for new mobility solutions. Like a lot of people think like ride hail is already completely occupied, but ride hail like hasn't taken a lot of use cases like family or kids or you know, stuff like that. I think there's still so much opportunity there. And you know, we just saw Revel come out in New York, which we're servicing them too. We work with them, and Revel is such a super cool company. Like they're using Tesla Model Ys. They have really good experience. They hired their drivers. They you know, part of their proposition is to, you know, work with the drivers and treat them really well because a good driver gives a good ride, and there's just a way better experience overall for riders in general. And I think, you know, who would have thought, right? It's just the same model, but like done a bit different and, you know, having really good results. So I think my advice would be, if you want to do something different in mobility, start your own company or align with one of these new startups. There's a lot of them. Really, really cool. Their cultures, you know, we were just talking about Kite. The culture at Kite is really, really nice. I know some of those of the folk there, and they're really great people, and they're all like very focused trying to do one thing. So that would be my first advice. And I think, and if that's not your cup of tea, I think that teams like your team that are working in innovation and thinking about like the future of mobility, like those are really cool. There's think tanks that are doing it. There's new offices being open at different cities around the U.S. Like Michigan as a state has a department for mobility, I believe. In one of the conferences that I've been last year, I met the person leading that. L.A. has an innovation department too that deals a lot with mobility and stuff like that. So even if you're in policy, I feel like there's so many opportunities on that side as well. So yeah, I guess in summary, you know, start a company, work for a startup, or go and work for one of these like innovation teams, either at corporations or at cities or at other companies.
I have one more quick question. If you can answer it in one sentence, maybe not, but what equals success for an innovation team?
Oh, experimentation.
Okay. Got it. Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
With metrics, maybe, if I can add.
With metrics. Okay.
Yeah. Great. Well, I guess I had one final question, if it's okay. So
yeah,
you've been all around the world and you've seen transportation infrastructure and methods in Costa Rica and in China and in San Francisco. These are all different places. What's your favorite way of getting around?
Oh, driving my bike is so exciting, and using an e-bike is also very exciting. I like maybe 4 years ago visit Copenhagen, and driving, we rented bikes and we drove our bikes everywhere. We didn't even take the bus or the train. It was incredible. It was super cool. That city was really inspiring. I haven't seen a city treat bicycles and bike lanes like that. I'm pushing for San Francisco to get there one day. I live in San Francisco, so that would be life changing for me not to have to, you know, argue with bus drivers and people getting into the bike lane and being fearful for my life in every intersection. But
it
yeah,
is not
definitely
fun to ride a bike here, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, great question. Thank you so much, guys. I really, really appreciate the opportunity. I hope it was helpful, and thanks for the chance to get to talk to you too.
Thanks, Jose. Very nice to have you on this episode of Mobility Now, and we hope the audience enjoyed this. Thanks.